This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Bike Rides in the Cul-de-Sac. Bike Rides in the Cul-de-Sac. Car! Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is called A Midsummer Night's Dream for Kids. Shakespeare isn't really for kids. I don't say that in a snobby way, like they aren't smart enough to understand theater. And I also don't say it in a puritanical way, like they might be damaged by all the dirty jokes. It's just that it isn't for kids. Shakespeare plays were written for an adult audience. There are themes and language that isn't appropriate for young viewers. Even if Shakespeare were G-rated, five acts is way too much for kids to sit through. Some plays can never be made kid-friendly. I love Shakespeare's Henriade, the group of four plays including Richard II, Henry IV Part 1, Henry IV Part 2, and Henry V. I love them, and I would never teach them to school kids. They're way too complicated, both in terms of plot and morality. These plays make light of alcoholism, prostitution, armed robbery, government corruption, murder, child murder, faking pregnancy to avoid arrest for murder. Not really family-friendly stuff, and you're just not going to have time in a regular school class to explain any of it properly. There are exceptions, though. And today, I'll be giving my recommendation about the best way to introduce kids to Shakespeare. Before I get to that, though, this is episode 79, which means the 100th episode is right on the horizon. I've really enjoyed doing the show, and it's been great to see how the audience has grown. Co-host Chloe and I want to answer questions from the listeners like we did for the 50th episode. So if you have anything you'd like to ask us, send it in to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I also wanted to say thanks again to Tom Phillips, also known as Tom the Tale Teller, as well as his daughter Emmy for joining us in the last episode. We had a lot of fun. Tom and his family came to my house, we had a little barbecue, and we read the best submissions to my spring writing challenge. I wanted to let you know about some things Tom will be up to in the near future. He'll be telling stories at the Cheltenham Literature Festival in early October, and if you can make it up to the town of Leek in Shropshire on Sunday, July 2nd, he'll be telling stories at the festival celebrating the town's connections to the famous medieval poem called Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. I'll post links to those events in the show notes for this episode at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. Back in episode 31, I talked about how Much Ado About Nothing is full of the kind of drama that teenagers will recognize. Its plot is all about how jealousy, gossip, and rumors can be used by bullies to manipulate young, emotional, hot-headed people. Entire friend groups can be ripped apart, and otherwise good relationships can be soured by this kind of behavior. But younger children aren't going to sit through that, or most Shakespeare productions. Even if most of the plays weren't about high politics, murder, medieval history, and sword fights, the archaic language and sheer length of the plays are going to be way too much for a first-timer. A few of the comedies can be exceptions, though. I feel that The Taming of the Shrew is very easily understood by modern audiences, and Twelfth Night can also work well if performed in the right way. But probably none of Shakespeare's works is better suited for children than A Midsummer Night's Dream. And even then, you may not want to give the entire play to kids all at once. An abridgment or adaptation will be best. The 1935 film starring Dick Powell, Olivia de Havilland, and a young Mickey Rooney as Puck is very good, and despite being nearly 90 years old, kids still love it. However, I think the very best introduction is just to see part of Act 5, the famous play within a play. A Midsummer Night's Dream plot about angsty lovers and quarreling fairies is the main course of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Then at the very end, a little dessert is served up, when the story of Pyramus and Thisbe is performed by a group of totally incompetent amateurs. By the time this scene happens, the play really is over. The conflict between Oberon and Titania is over, and the passionate, confusing turmoil of the young people has all been settled down. Most people who have ever heard of Pyramus and Thisbe know the story because of this play, but it's actually a real tale. The earliest versions come from ancient Greece, but the most famous telling is in the poem Metamorphoses, written by the Roman writer Ovid. Pyramus and Thisbe were said to have lived in ancient Babylon. They live next door to each other and fall in love, but their parents hate each other and forbid them to wed. The couple is able to communicate through a hole in the wall that separates their homes, and eventually they plan to meet in secret, near the tomb of Ninus, under a mulberry tree. Thisbe gets there first, but is surprised by the sight of a lion whose mouth is bloody from a recent kill. As she flees, Thisbe drops her cloak, and the lion chews on it a bit before leaving. Pyramus comes along, finds the cloak, and assumes the worst. He falls on his sword, not wanting to live without his beloved. His blood spatters upon the white fruits of the mulberry tree, staining them scarlet. After discovering what's happened, Thisbe also kills herself with Pyramus's sword. Moved by Thisbe's lamentations before her death, the gods decide to change the color of mulberry fruit from white to a deep blood red in honor of the faithful but ill-fated lovers. This makes Pyramus and Thisbe an etiological myth, a story that explains the origin of something. This tale was very well known during the Renaissance. Giovanni Boccaccio wrote about it twice, once in his book On Famous Women, and again in the Decameron. Geoffrey Chaucer first wrote about it in English in the late 14th century, more than 200 years before Shakespeare wrote A Midsummer Night's Dream. Audiences in Shakespeare's day would have known this story as a serious, important work of tragedy. They would have heard it told in English, or, if they were upper class, perhaps even studied it in the original Latin. Watching a bunch of buffoons completely botch the story would have been even more funny, because Shakespeare's audience would have understood that none of it is supposed to be funny. I may be reading a bit too much into this, but I have to wonder if we're getting a glimpse into Shakespeare's personality with Act 5 of A Midsummer Night's Dream. This play came out at roughly the same time as Romeo and Juliet, which takes its basic plot from the tale of Pyramus and Thisbe. So that means that Shakespeare was writing both a totally serious and totally farcical version of this story at the same time. He couldn't have been too uptight about the classics, or he wouldn't have done such an outrageous parody. He savagely skewers all kinds of things in this scene. Bad actors, people who talk too much at the theater, and even the idea that classical myths and legends are too sacred to be mocked. He wasn't afraid to have a little fun with a story that, until he got a hold of it, was treated with absolute seriousness. And Shakespeare also knew that comedy is even funnier when it's directly contrasted against tragedy. And all that's interesting, but little kids don't need to know any of this background. For a first foray into the world of iambic pentameter, they just need to be entertained. And Shakespeare's comedic take on a classic tragedy will get the job done. And hopefully kids will also learn from this play that Shakespeare isn't boring, and they'll be more open to works of high culture in the future. It was easy for me to lift Shakespeare's comedic version of Pyramus and Thisbe right out of the larger play and format the script as a short one-act play. The result is something that's just over 20 minutes long and will be both entertaining and easy to understand for little children. You could do it as a puppet show, in a classroom with minimal props and costumes, or as a regular stage performance. Adapting and editing Shakespeare can seem controversial, but really, it happens all the time. Very few stage productions contain the entire script of a Shakespeare play. Hamlet is like more than 4 hours long if you try to do the whole thing. When putting on a play, you have to know what audience you're trying to reach and present the right material. So when I trimmed down Act 5 of A Midsummer Night's Dream, I imagined a performance for children who have never seen any Shakespeare before. I cleared away everything but the play put on by the blue-collar acting troupe. To make it easier on the actors, I refer to them all by the characters they're playing in the scene. In the original script, the lines are marked out as bottom playing Pyramus or flute playing Thisbe. Since this is no longer a play within a play, it's less confusing just to mark the lines as being directly for Pyramus, Thisbe, Wall, Lion, and so on. I also trimmed out just a few lines of banter between Theseus and his friends. There are a couple of references that children won't understand without historical context or knowledge of some archaic words, and they just aren't needed. Other than that, the lines are in their original form. I did struggle with whether or not to tack on Puck's concluding speech at the end. Ultimately, I decided to cut it, because while it's a very famous speech that Shakespeare fans often know by heart, the sudden introduction of an unfamiliar character won't make any sense to the kids watching. You also get a very nice conclusion when the players do a little dance and then Theseus says it's time to go to bed. However, if you put on this version of Act 5 and you think Puck's speech is the best conclusion, go for it. Let me know if it works. As far as the format of the script, I tried to lay it out in a way so that stage directions are very clear and there's plenty of blank space for actors to pencil in notes. This can be helpful if you end up doing the play with young performers who often need to write down important notes about entrances, exits, and movements in more detail than older actors. You can download my abridged script for Act 5 of A Midsummer Night's Dream on the show notes for this episode at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I also have a few lesson ideas there. If there's a lesson plan from an older episode that you'd like to revisit, you can browse the archive of shows by clicking on the episodes link at the website. Shakespeare hasn't stayed popular for 400 years just because of tradition. His plays paint a full picture of real human beings. Some noble, some foolish, some honorable, ridiculous, or pitiable, and sometimes all of those things at once. Once you discover Shakespeare, you'll be a fan for life. Act 5 of A Midsummer Night's Dream is the friendliest possible introduction for kids, and can spark a lifelong passion for the world's greatest playwright. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.